places, everyone. Quiet on the set. Curtains in five.
Hello, and welcome back to Footlights, a community theater podcast coming to you from the studios of WVIK Radio in Rock Island, Illinois. And we are recording today's episode on August 30th. I'm Chris Hicks, and joining me today as guest host for what I hope is only his first gig is the man who has his thumb on the pulse of the Quad Cities entertainment scene. He's a veteran arts journalist and author and an accomplished pianist and kind of a former boss of mine, the one, the only, Jonathan Turner.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks a lot for having me. Well, wow, the former boss, that goes way back to the Dispatch Argus. And you are very...
As I like to say, pre-pandemic, everything is now pre or post-pandemic.
Everything before COVID seems so long ago. And,
it does.
But you were a very big help in helping me with theater reviews.
Well, thank you for joining me today.
And for WVIK.
I'm so grateful and excited because I anticipate that your music background will be invaluable while we chat with today's guest.
Right.
Who is, although I don't really know much about her, I just know her reputation in local theater is enviable. So welcome Cindy Ramos, current president of the board of Countryside Community Theater, which performs their shows in Eldridge, Iowa, at North Scott High School's amazing auditorium. In fact, the whole school is incredibly beautiful.
Right,
so
yes.
Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's start with your history.
Oh, goodness.
You can start at birth and work your way forward or anywhere in between. Don't forget your social security number and credit card information.
Well, sure.
That's offline. I'll do that. But did you grow up in Moline? Which town did you grow up in?
Born and raised in Moline. Moline for life. Been in the Quad Cities my entire life. That's kind of why I stayed here. I loved it here.
So, when did the bug bite you, the theater bug?
My parents tell me I've always been outgoing when it comes to just wanting to perform. From a very young age, I know when I was teeny tiny and they say like two or three, I would perform for anybody that would ask. That was basically, and it kind of went from there. My parents got a recommendation. I don't remember from who. I actually got to performing through the world of pageantry. There was, Illinois had a Little Miss competition and my parents were encouraged to take me. And my first time out through it, I ended up being third runner up at the state competition.
Wow. Wow, how adorable.
How old were you at the time?
At the time, I was 6 years old.
Wow.
Cute. So six, that's first grade?
I was in first grade, yes.
Wow.
When was your first school play?
First school play was, I believe, second grade. They did Henny Penny. It was Henny Penny, The Sky is Falling. I got to be Henny Penny.
Nice. Oh, heavy literature there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so you said you've played a number of instruments over the years. What was your first instrument?
First instrument was violin. I studied it with Merle Wagner, actually, through the Moline School District. They started kids in fifth grade, and I just fell in love with it. And some people talk about how they're programmed, how they can learn more than one language. For me, I learned really early on that more than one instrument just seemed natural. Like, it was an easy thing to progress from instrument to instrument. It just made sense somehow.
And they're very different instruments. What instruments all do you play, and do you still play them?
There's a long list.
I don't do low brass, which is kind of funny, but that's just because they're large instruments to get my arms around.
I'm music stupid here. No
tuba.
What does low brass mean?
Tubas, euphoniums, trombone. It's an arm issue. Bassoon was the one. I loved it, but I just physically holding the instrument was a little difficult.
Oh, really?
And then everything else, I just kind of picked up along the way. The craziest thing I've ever played with regards to theater, actually, I played accordion for a production of Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, how fun.
Did you know there was accordion in that?
There wasn't. They just found out I could play it, and they're like, let's put it in Bushwick and Son.
Oh, yeah, right.
So do you still play all these instruments?
Whenever I get a chance to. Not as much these days as I'd like to. Gosh, I don't even know the last time I played in pit, I was probably doing synthesizer of some sort.
And you said you didn't take up piano until high school? What year in high school? How come you waited that long?
Freshman year in high school. It was something that just never came up. But freshman year, Merle had been my violin teacher. And then when I went to high school, unfortunately, he got sick our freshman year, the class of us. And so Mr. Kremetz took over. And he was the one that was like, have you ever thought about being a conductor? And I was like, I've thought about it, but I've never heard anybody say it to me. And he was really a driving force to me to say, you know, you need to learn to play the piano. He's like, you're going to need to know, have that skill for college. They're going to have keyboarding requirements. And I was like, okay, what do I do? And at that time, McKay Music in Moline was still open, and Cherry Peterson took me on. She knew exactly why I was there. I wanted to be a music major, and she was told, just push me as hard as she could to get me ready to be able to play for those college auditions come freshman year in college.
So in the course of 4 years, yes, you became accomplished.
As far as I could, yes.
So wow. What was your involvement in the Moline High School theater program?
I did their musicals there along with their plays. I was involved with their pep band, jazz band. They had orchestra, chamber orchestra, all of it. If there was something available, I would do it, or at least try. Even with regards to pep band, I didn't do just electric bass. That's when I learned to play the alto saxophone.
Wow. So for the plays, did you perform in the orchestra, or were you on stage?
For plays, I was on stage. And then for fall musical, it kind of depended. At that time, Allstate, which would happen, occurred within like a weekend of the musical. So depending on where that fell, I was either playing in the pit or I was getting a chance to perform.
Wow. Did you have a favorite show during high school?
Oh, it was probably Bye Bye Birdie. We had the best time with that one. It was just, and it sang to my heart because I'm a big Elvis fan. So the whole idea of that Elvis influence, I loved it.
Well, my head is spinning. Seriously.
Right. Have you ever been involved in All Shook Up production?
I haven't yet.
That's like the Elvis musical, right?
My Elvis stuff has made it to a display for it. When Music Guild did All Shook Up, Bob Williams borrowed my Elvis collection to be able to put in the front entryway.
What did you have in your collection?
Oh, I have records. I have lunch boxes, dolls. You name it, I've got it.
Oh, wow.
When I graduated from high school, in fact, I told my parents I wasn't going to graduate unless I got a velvet Elvis for my college present, for a present to go to college.
A velvet Elvis? Painting? What is that?
It is a velvet Elvis. It is a painting of Elvis on velvet.
Right.
Oh,
it's about, you know, it's about 2 feet wide, about 3 feet tall.
One of those black velvet things?
Yes. And it was G.I. Blues Elvis because that one was my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Now, you have performed in straight theater, right? Not just musicals.
Absolutely.
In fact, I think I reviewed a show you were in at Playcrafters. I don't remember the name of it, but I do remember there was a chihuahua involved.
Playcrafters? Which one?
Actually, I wasn't in it. I was the director. That was the Games Afoot, my dearly beloved chihuahua Java. He passed away. He played Portia,
really?
The dog in the production.
I remember that there was a dog, and I remember that it was a male dog playing a female part.
Correct, because he was able to die
on cue.
That's
acting.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. He was very well trained. He could die on cue.
Wow.
He was very well behaved.
Yes.
Very well behaved.
My little stage boy, yes.
So you have directed, you have performed. What else have you done?
Been a music director. I've been an assistant director, costume designer actually for quite a long time. There was for a while I was doing that. I've been known to run lights, but that's not too often. Only when I have to. That's one of those skills that's just, it's there, but we'll only use it when necessary.
Okay, now explain to me the difference between just the director and the music director. How do you mesh those two together?
Well, director-wise, it is strictly the book. It's the blocking, it's everything on stage except dancing. Although in some cases, I've had to do that too. And then music direction is strictly everything in that score. You're in charge of getting that orchestra going, keeping everyone going when the show's running.
Wow. I've always considered that a really, what appears to be, for me, a non-musical person, a difficult thing for a cast to sing along with a live band.
Yes.
Versus a recorded band, because there can always be a little difference, maybe? Is that true?
That's very true. And you kind of have to teach them your own I think of it as your choreography as a conductor. Again, conductor is probably one of my first loves. And this past spring, actually, I was at the Davenport Central doing Mamma Mia. And we had a night where I explained to him all when we were going to get together. I'm like, okay, I need to explain these different hand motions to you. And some of it dated me, but they still laughed with me. I kept explaining, like, they needed to hold notes. And a lot of kids were like, we're not used to following a conductor. What do you mean? I said, well, at the end, your phrase is, you know how many counts they are. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4. But you also need to know as a group, you need to cut off the same time. I said, you need to look up. I said, YouTube Bugs Bunny conducting, and it's a series of just shaking your hand. I said, you're going to see this little hand shaking, and then you're going to see these big circles. I said, when the circle stops, that's when you stop. Off,
right. Oh, okay. I've seen that in school concerts.
And a lot of people are very flowery about it, I'll say. I'm very simple with it. I'm like, we all got to get this job done and get it done as quickly as possible. So let's keep it simple, but right from the get-go, I'm like, these are what my cutoffs look like. This is what my conducting pattern looks like. And I always tell them, like, for instance, if I'm helping a singer get into something, I said, I will always invite you. There'll always be a hand gesture that leans towards you to know this is exactly where I want you to come in. So you're not guessing if that little peck or that little nuance was what you meant.
Oh, that's very good that you go over that with them ahead of time.
So were you music director and choreographer for that?
No, for that one, I was just the vocal director and the pit director.
Right. Okay. And what shows, you went to Ambrose for college?
Yes.
What shows were you involved there?
There was another version of Beauty and the Beast. I cannot remember who it was. It was a cute show, though. Along with Little Shop of Horrors, How to Succeed in Business.
Wow, right.
I know The Glass Menagerie was one and a few other plays. Oh, mm-hmm. I think Agnes of God was one also.
Right.
That was a musical?
No, that's a straight play.
I was going to say.
They all kind of blend together for me.
Do you have a preference in terms of which role on or off stage you're doing?
Oh, my goodness. You know, anymore, things have kind of developed over time. And for me, it's whatever's going to inspire the next generation is where I'm at now in that. I told people I ended up directing because there weren't that many people of color directing. I said it was time. It was time for people to see that. Growing up, I didn't see much of it at all, which made it that much more difficult for me trying to get into that field, even music directing. I mean, people are always like, you're the first, you know, Latina we've ever worked with, or first person of color ever in the arts. We're not used to it. But yay, you know, they're excited about it. So whatever it takes to just inspire.
I'm glad you brought that up because I know you were very excited this past summer to bring In the Heights to the Quad Cities, which was amazing. And I really just want to get into Countryside a bit because I have been so impressed. A, what does president of the Countryside Board involve? B, I would like to know, like, expenses. You're in that beautiful auditorium in Eldridge. Do you have to rent that? You seem to have a huge volunteer group because with the Little Mermaid, you had a souvenir table and a rose table. Tell me all about this. It was all so... Take it away.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Countryside, of course, started in 1983. That was when the Countryside began. North Scott High School is the venue. There was I don't know what they called it, a referendum or an addendum. Something had happened, and a vote had to happen to help them renovate that space to get the theater at North Scott. Mm-hmm. Since then, we've shared space with them. They've been kind. Lancer Productions is the name of the drama group within the school.
Oh, okay.
And we work together with them to kind of, you know, in the summertime, we take over and kind of do our thing out there and get out just in time for them to start the school year. Outside of that, we are still meeting year-round. It is Eldridge United Methodist Church, just not even maybe a minute down the road from the theater. It is where we base ourselves out of.
Are you involved with the school theater program at all?
Not through Countryside. In the past, I have been their costume designer along with their music director.
Okay.
So what was the first year you did a Countryside production?
Oh, my goodness. I think that thinking back, I was in college, so it had to be like the late 90s somewhere, and I think the show was A Day in Hollywood, A Night in the Ukraine. I think that was the show. I'm hoping.
A Day in Hollywood, A Night in the Ukraine.
Yeah, I was helping out with crew for that.
Wow, that's an interesting title.
Yes, it's a long time ago. I remember Corey Johnson directed that, but that's all I kind of remember about it. It's been too long, getting to that age. And then from there, oh gosh, there have been quite a few shows over the years with Countryside. It was just such a welcoming environment. It's kind of what kept me coming back.
And they did, Norscott did some major renovations. I can't remember how many years ago, but it's been, there was a time where Countryside wasn't able to use the auditorium.
Yes, there was a summer while they were working up in the mezzanine and had offices moved up into the mezzanine of the theater. They ended up doing, I believe it was Shrek at Bettendorf High School.
Bettendorf, right. Yes. Right.
So they moved out of there, and then the Marvelous Wonderettes were done at what is now the Village Theater.
Right, right. And so did they make improvements to the lobby, too?
They completely redid it. Right. Yeah, it's a completely different way to get into the theater, even. Currently, where the entrance is now from the parking lot, that was the side of the lobby, not the entrance straight into the lobby. It used to be a long bank of double doors.
The whole school looks brand new.
They take incredible care of it. They really, really do. Wow.
Did they expand the stage at all or make any changes backstage or on stage?
It pretty much, once you hit the back end of the stage, that's it. Okay. You see, they recently did an upgrade in the dressing rooms, but they got brand new cabinetry for that. But other than that, there was nothing else upgraded back there. They're hoping in the future, though, to be able to add on to that and hopefully make those dressing rooms larger.
And I know South Pacific was like a special production for you, directed by Brian Nelson.
It was. It's the one and only that he ever directed. And it was
the only one he directed?
Yes. Wow. He had plans to do a second one that we had just started talking about right before he passed away. And I mean within a few days before it.
For our listeners, tell who Brian
was. Oh, my gosh.
Was.
I had worked with Brian at the Dispatch Argus. He was a longtime copy editor for the newspaper. He just had a booming operatic voice, such a nice down-to-earth personality, even though he was, you know, trained in classical music and such an amazing voice. He was very unpretentious and just so nice to work with and to know. And he did just a tremendous amount of theater. And he was on stage for many productions. He was in was it Circa, where he played old Deuteronomy in Cats,
I think so, yes.
Right, and I didn't know he'd only directed that one production.
It was his first and only, yes.
And refresh our memory of what your role in South Pacific was. So that
Bloody
was
Mary, yeah, that was quite something.
For you, right?
I had no intention of auditioning for that show, and he happened to mention he was going to be directing. I was like, oh, I'll come, just, you know, audition for the chorus, and then got the role and was just completely in shock. In fact, to this day, I have saved the voicemail where he offered me the part.
No way.
Yeah, wow. It is like my lucky charm. I take it. It's there. It's always there.
But yeah, I mean, his death was a shock. I can't remember which year it was, but he was just around 60, I think.
Oh yeah, it was heartbreaking. But he had a heart as big as his voice.
Right, right.
Just so encouraging, and absolutely encouraging of me. He was one of my biggest influences when I really decided to move more towards theater versus orchestras. He's like, you can do this. He was always giving me encouragement. I always get an email or a voicemail from him, just letting me know, you got to just keep pushing. You can do it.
Right, sure.
Let's circle back to Countryside.
Sure.
And so, yeah, when did you join the board?
The board, I joined the year that they did Newsy. So I think it's been almost 3 years now.
3 years, right.
I had been away for a while. I had a daughter. And so, you know, getting used to that and motherhood and all of that. And then kind of joined up. And last year was voted in as president.
And what does that entail?
I tell everybody it's kind of like being the Google of the organization.
Ooh.
People have questions. They need to get
everything.
I have to find a way to do it. If I don't know, I need to know someone who can or figure out some way to get it done. For me, it's felt a lot like being an artistic director in that, you know, you need to be a little bit knowing of all things, which for me has been, it's actually been a nice transition, a nice, easy transition to be able to sit around and say, okay, I do know someone after all these years that can help us out.
So does the board choose the season, the shows? So what was the process for you to, I know you called this year a season of dreams.
Correct.
In the Heights and Little Mermaid. How did that process work?
We would have started, let's see here, last spring. There is an actual group. We have a committee that meets, and they bring us a whole slate of different shows. From there, we start whittling down. We start saying, we're interested in this show or this show. Or perhaps there's a show that we've been waiting for and just waiting for the opportunity. For instance, Hairspray. Hairspray was a show that actually was voted in to do, but then we lost the rights when the touring production happened. So we had to hold off on that one. In the Heights was a 2-year plan. We actually, they were talking about it 2 years ago, and I was like, oh, I need time to make this happen. This was before I was even president. I'm like, we need time to really organize to get the talent that we need. And so sometimes there's a show in there like that, and that's how In the Heights came to be. And then along with all of that, you know, we started talking more about kids. We want more opportunities for children. You know, they are the future of our organization, so we ended up with Little Mermaid.
Well, you hit it out of the park.
Thank you.
With Little Mermaid. So did you have a committee to do the lobby decorations, or how did all that all come right. about? I was just so impressed with that, as well as the friend that I brought with, because Mr. Hicks is not a musical person.
Oh, okay.
Of any kind except Fiddler on the Roof. And so Disney just wasn't going to cut it for him. So I took a friend, and she was just blown away. She was just blown away. So tell me about that, how you get up, bring all that about.
Well, part of what you're seeing in the lobby is a joint effort with us along with Lancer Productions. Since Lancer Productions is there all year round, they actually run the concession stand along with a souvenir stand in the center part of the theater. So they always have something available, so we don't have to worry about patrons having water or treats during intermission and that sort of thing. It's nice to be able to just say, here you go, and it helps them raise money also. Which is great.
Okay, so it wasn't Countryside, it was Lancer Productions.
Who did all the decorations?
Well, that's where the other half of comes in with us. So then the other table that you see is part of our Limelight Scholarship that we've formed. That table is all handled by the board. The board makes the items that you see there, and a lot of times they're donating their own money to make those items to help us towards our scholarship fund. And we raise, I think, well over $1,000 for our scholarship fund.
Oh, great.
Yes. And then decorations that you saw came from a church within town. They were having a vacation Bible school with a nautical theme, so we were able to borrow those. And then
interesting, because there was a church in Moline that had Oceanics theme this year too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. And so then from there, we had board members that would come in the week, probably 2 weeks it took them, prior to get the different stuff set up in the lobby at night while we were rehearsing. They'd be in the lobby getting the pool noodles handled or getting the stones created and everything. We want a full immersion experience. Once you step into the theater, we want you to just feel part of the family.
Well, we did. In spades.
Must have been popular for selfies and photos.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And In the Heights, that's part of what started it. We had a bodega because we were like, we need people to have that bodega experience. And, you know, that was one of the things in doing the show. People were like, bodegas? We just don't quite get it. I'm like, well, let's have one for you. And so one of our board members, Cade, actually was the one that came up with the idea and the decorations for it.
I was just going to say, In the Heights had never really been done by community theater in the Quad Cities, right? So that must have been special to premiere it, even though it was 2009, 2008 when it premiered. Mm-hmm. But it was obviously the big Tony-winning musical by Lin-Manuel Miranda before Hamilton. It was very important to, you know, reflecting his neighborhood where he grew up. And as a Latina, can you talk about why that was so important for you?
For me, I just never thought I'd see it. I mean, you put things on what's called your theater bucket list, you know, and I was like, someday I want to be Abuela Claudia. It probably will never, ever happen in this lifetime. And then all of a sudden, it got brought up with Countryside. It's like, wait, what? Really? Yeah, I just didn't think anyone would think about it. And they were just so encouraging as a board. Like, I was just coming onto the board when they were talking about it. And it was like, okay, you know what? Yeah, we can make this happen. Just I need time. And to see people that look like me in a cast, unreal.
Right. How much of a challenge was it to cast?
You know, the young man who played the lead
Usnavi.
Usnavi.
Yes,
right.
Sorry. I see so many shows in such a short period of time that I lose characters. I thought he looked and sounded a lot like Lin-Manuel.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. There were times if you're off stage and you're like, wait a minute.
Sure. Now, did you have trouble getting the rights to produce it? I was not aware until we had Laura Adams here at Footlights that you have to get that writers or whatever can be really snotty about letting you do their show. So did you have trouble getting the rights to do?
Not trouble with the rights. Rights-wise, we were okay, but then the writers that come in with the contracts give you very specific licensing criteria. So in this case, there was a clause about Latinx and what roles must be Latinx people. There was no way around it. I think the term, a lot of people, they talk about how things have been whitewashed. That could not be done with the show, period. Like, if you were going to do that, you cannot do the show. And so that was a big part of it. But it wasn't as difficult as people made it out to be for us. That was probably the first criticism we heard a lot. There's no, that Latin influence in the Quad Cities, it's not there. That the talent does not exist. You'll never be able to cast it.
Well, you proved them wrong.
Yes, we did. I mean, I got many messages from people saying, you know, you really shouldn't be doing the show. You'll never get the people. And anyone that knows me knows, don't tell me I can't do something. I will make it happen.
Right. But it's such a growing, significant part of the Quad Cities population.
Yes.
It's good to reflect that community.
Yes. And we had such a great relationship with organizations such as Mercado and Fifth. We are the first theater to ever perform there. And we've been there every summer for the past, what, 2 or 3 years now. Wow. We've been able to go. I had the best time. We took the cast of Footloose when I directed it down there to perform. And that's when we made the announcement about In the Heights. And the roar. I've never heard anything like it before. Right. People were so excited. And just, they're like, oh, I'm going to see myself on stage. Like, these kids were excited too. They're like, wow, you know. And then a lot of them were able to come out to see us for the production. Some of these younger ones. And so we're hoping we've influenced them to maybe continue, give theater a try.
And you got to play the part you'd been wanting. And you did a very good job.
I did. I did run into an issue with the first weekend. I did end up with COVID. No, sorry, the second weekend. I got COVID.
Second weekend, right.
So I missed the Friday and Saturday performance, but I rallied together to do the Sunday one.
So awesome. Did you have somebody go in your place? How did that work?
They had to have somebody off stage. They could not have anybody that was not of Latino background on the stage at all.
Oh, so she was one of the Latinx requirements.
Yes.
Okay.
So they had somebody read it, so we were able to meet requirements for it.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that had to... affect the action.
Yes. I was told they made it work, though, because I was at home on a lot of painkillers.
Oh, did you have a tough time with it?
I did. When I got COVID, instead of having the cough, I ended up losing my voice altogether. I couldn't speak.
No. Oh, my
goodness. As of that Saturday, I couldn't talk. By that night, I'd had some steroids, enough so that I was finally able to speak Sunday morning to go to the show.
Wow.
You do what you got to do.
What was the attendance like for the shows?
You know, not as much as we'd like, but a lot of new people. So sure. We know we've gained audience members in that matter, and it's done a lot to bring more interest to us. Especially with Hairspray coming up, we've got a lot of people that said, you know, we normally wouldn't look in a theater, but we're interested. We've seen what you've done. They like the idea that we've been able to represent a little bit of everybody. You know, we're not going with just one center. Of course, within the Heights, the Latino culture, but, you know, the African-American community, we had been at the center in Davenport, the Lincoln Center. And we're able to reach out to the community out there when we were doing Charlie Brown Christmas. And now with Hairspray coming and talking about civil rights with that show, I am so excited with what's going to be coming up.
Now, do you only perform in summer? That's a really short season, only two shows.
Two shows, right.
Currently, yes. A children's show will be on board in the coming year. However, we were supposed to do one this coming, but with things that had happened in the community with regards to theater availability, we weren't able to secure the theater that we needed. So we're just holding off, which is fine. It gives us more time to raise more money. Always a good thing.
Has the board looked into doing like a full third show during the summer?
In the past, they've actually done a spring musical.
Okay.
So that's something else as we kind of regroup and try to figure out how and where. I think the resources are there for us to be able to do it. Unfortunately, this is the location. With theaters the way they are now, they are so booked up.
Oh, and spring school still in session, yes. So you wouldn't be able to use North Scott.
Right.
Could it be a joint? I mean, you said you've worked with Lancer Productions to have a joint production during the school year?
For them, the way that their theater works over there, they are just so busy and scheduled so far out in advance. I don't think at this time, but at least we are getting a lot of help from them in the summer. We're able to take their kids from the summer, from the school year, kind of like the who's who, and bring them in for the summer to work for us. They've been light designers. We've had people that have been tech directors, crew members, because that's part of our mission is not only to give people these opportunities to perform, but give them the opportunity to learn more about theater from a professional aspect. We kind of run kind of the gamut between being community theater and a summer stock. We're kind of like in between, right in between, and really wanting to train people to go out there and do this. Is this really what they want to do?
Well, Little Mermaid was special in that you had
a really wide age group.
Yes.
Because how young was the youngest member in the ensemble?
We had a 5-year-old.
And adorable.
But, yeah, I was going to say, I just quickly mentioned I got to be in the pit playing one of the keyboard parts, and it was a lot of fun to be part of the production. But I was so impressed by, you know, Ellery as Ariel and Croy Baker and I can't remember his name, who played the prince. Oh, Prince Eric, his amazing voice. But it was a very young, very young cast. Was that unusual in terms of having those leads with younger
performers? It's been kind of a switch up here within the past probably 5 years that's been happening more and more. And it's great to see a lot of people are coming. They are products of the community from the Creative Arts Academy. So we had quite a few. Ellery was one that was from over there for Central. Carter Jargo was from out in Clinton. I don't remember the name. I think it's Northeast Community High School. Wow. These kids have all been the who's who of Iowa. Right. If you're familiar with their thespian awards and their different competitions they have, these kids have been finalists with these things. Right. So they've had great, great training, especially even locally. I mean, they're doing what they absolutely love to do. Actually, Carter Jargo, I keep telling him, he's going to be the one I said that I knew him when.
Right. And I had written about, you know, Croy Baker was one at Central who went to the Jimmy Awards.
Yes, he did.
And that's the biggest, you know, high school theater festival in the country. And he was just finished his freshman year in college.
Yeah, he was at Milliken.
And coming to do for Milliken. Yeah, so
yeah, we have him at Milliken, and Carter Jargo just left for Baldwin Wallace.
Oh, yeah.
I was here at the studio the other night for the open house. And I can't remember who it was, but they asked me about, and I can't remember his name, who played Ursula.
Yeah.
Oh, Nick.
Nick Munson. Yeah,
Nicholas Munson.
Asked, you know, how he was, and I said he stole every scene he was in. He was just over the top.
He was playing his dream role. He loves Ursula.
It was obvious that it was his dream role.
I was so excited to see him. He was actually one of my students when I was at Moline High School.
Really?
I was a costume designer for Oliver. Oh, that's when I first met him. And I even remember back then him talking about Ursula. So I'm just like, this all has come full circle.
You know.
So it really was Season of Dreams for a lot of people.
Oh, yes. It was named that for a very just reason.
Isn't that a wonderful aspect of theater, that you get to fulfill people's dreams?
Yes. Yeah, like people love certain shows, and this is their dream to be able to be part of the production.
When we opened In the Heights even, that first cast meeting before we started, I mean, there were a lot of tears. People just saying, I never in my lifetime thought this would happen here. They just never thought. They'd had experiences elsewhere with their theater careers where things didn't quite go the way we would think they would go for them, and to have roles that were almost written for them. I mean, these opportunities, they were beyond grateful. They got to learn about their own cultures. And we had a lot of people where people didn't realize they were even of Latinx background, and people were just shocked.
Really?
Yeah. Jacob Johnson was one of them that talked about it. I was like, nobody realizes I'm Puerto Rican. His brother Maxwell was also in the show. They're like, people just didn't know. And I'm like, well, now they do. And you've definitely given them clear signs of what is going on.
The young lady who played the female lead in the Heights.
It was either, let's see here, Abby or Mia.
I can't remember. Now, she, to me, did not particularly look Latinx. And that's what when you were talking about it, made me stop and think, well, is she Latinx of origin? Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, she would have had to be, because obviously a lead role, they would have insisted on being Latinx.
Yes. And we had a mixture. I mean, with Latinx, I mean, we have Afro-Latinas. We had a little of everything in the show. And just trying to educate the community on that was a big part of it, because when the cast list went out, people automatically looked at the names and just said, you don't have anyone. And then we had a few choice people that did contact us through Countryside. And of course, if they're emailing me, my name is not in my email address. So that would say, you know, there's nobody of any type of ethnic background with your board. I had to respond back and kind of politely and explain to them, there is, and we are one of the few. And it kind of go through all that with them. It was a lot of teaching moments with the show. A lot of teaching moments.
Wonderful.
And, I mean, for Hairspray next summer, that has some African-American roles,
correct,
too. So is that kind of a requirement that you're going to have to,
yes,
fill those with those?
Absolutely.
Actors?
And we knew that going in, and we welcome the challenge. We are right. So excited. I myself, again, born and raised around here, my background was with AmeriCorps. So when I served in AmeriCorps, I was in all these different communities doing fine arts programs. So a lot of them are around now, and now they're the ones in charge of the programs.
Right.
So it'll be nice. I've connected with them. We have a lot of people that we'll talk to with, like, Martin Luther King. Boys and Girls Club is one of my biggest backgrounds that I, to this day, credit with a lot of my success to help with them. Of course, Lincoln Center, they're excited. My kids from Central are like, oh, we will be there.
Good. Wow. And what's the second show next year?
We have actually the first show is Sister Act.
Oh, really?
And then, fun.
Yeah, and then the second show is Hairspray. So next season is actually our season of empowerment.
Right.
Excellent. I would like to get back to the running of the theater.
Sure.
Can we talk about expenses? Like, how much does it cost to get a show like In the Heights and Disney? I know from my work back when we still had Montgomery Elevator. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Disney's way or the highway.
Oh, yes. They're very, very strict about it. Anything you can do. Yes.
Right. So talk about those challenges and, like, how much does it cost to get the rights to do a show? And then, like, for Little Mermaid, you have those wonderful projected backdrops.
Screen,
does that
right.
come with the show? I would think that it does. You rent that from Disney or whatever?
Actually, no.
No?
No,
okay.
Not at all. With a lot of these shows, roughly, I would say, it goes by the number of seats in your house. So anywhere from 5 to 10,000 just for the rights to do it.
Wow.
You know, that doesn't include
the seating capacity?
It depends on your seating capacity. I would say locally within these bigger houses, we're all paying between 5 to 10,000.
Whew.
Yeah, it's a large sum of money. And then from there, that'll include like your librettos and your music and things of that sort. But anything extra you need. A big push anymore is to do these what are called patches for keyboards, where all the different sounds are pre-programmed.
Oh.
Because for
That's
us to do those,
what it was for me.
It
yeah,
would
right.
take hours. And those alone, I mean, you're looking anywhere between $200 to $500 for patches.
Wow.
It's not cheap, but again, it's time saving. It's much easier on the player to do it. And it helps us with regards to that education component too. People we have playing our pits are learning how to use the software, which is a great thing to learn as we keep moving in that direction with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times those will also have a string reduction because it's getting harder and harder to find string players. So for us, we can take that string part and we can put them all on one keyboard player. And he's able to play them with very beautiful sounds as opposed to what used to be very, we'll say, elevator music style.
So, yeah, so the Little Mermaid pit was about, I think, 10 people all together,
mm-hmm.
and no string players.
Right, there's a reduction.
Four keyboards. Yeah, a couple of the keyboards had a lot of those different instrumental sounds.
Wow.
And you only had, you know, the percussion, and you had string bass, I think upright bass, but it was like clarinet, trumpet, flute. So those string voices are part of the keyboard.
Right. So that helps us a lot.
And you
lot
were hiding
that.
In the pit, and I never knew it.
Right. All below the stage.
Right. And then along with that, the projections, those were actually designed by Alex Richardson. We hired him to do that.
He's everywhere. He's everywhere.
Yes. Right. And if you looked very carefully at them, too, I don't know if you noticed, they weren't only projection, a picture, they moved.
Oh, some video aspects?
There was a video aspect to it where you could see the waves going could see stars twinkling, things of that sort.
Uh-huh.
Just to up that experience for them, especially since a lot of kids, it was their first show. And you know, we all have to remember our first show.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Yes.
And will for the rest of their lives.
So does Countryside have to do special fundraisers? Do you have like
We received a grant this year with regard to the projector. So that made a big difference for us to be able to provide that. We're looking at the possibility of applying for more grants to purchase a projector now that we've seen how helpful that is with everything, especially with our schedule. We don't get much time in the space before we open a show. Whereas many people are in-house, they're in their own space. We usually get at the most 2 weeks to
Ooh,
get moved
really?
In and go and move forward with our
so
shows.
So you rehearse off-site.
Correct.
And then
we rehearse at a church. Sometimes we are able to use what's called the cheer dance room at North Scott. It's basically a large band room with mirrors on it.
And do you pay North Scott to use the space?
We do. Yes.
How much is that?
They, honestly, I don't know yet. We haven't received the bill yet. Since this is my first year as president, I haven't been billed yet.
Ooh, okay.
But we budget in for everything as much as we can for it. Because along with that, I mean, it's not just the space that we're doing. It's along with, like, janitorial. So we have to kind of get all that mm-hmm. into our numbers when we're trying to plan out.
What's your average audience?
Average? That's a good question. I should know that. It's probably between 400 and 500.
That's pretty good.
Per show or per performance?
Per performance.
Oh, that's
yeah. Great. That's I think that's right. That's roughly what we budget on, is that 400 to 500.
Great. And have the ticket prices stayed the same pretty much over the years?
We're one of the lower ones right now. Everybody, unfortunately, with costs going up, ticket prices are going up. I think right now we're at 18 for a ticket.
Mm-hmm. And you usually have student prices?
We don't. We kept it at 18 that way.
For everyone?
Yeah, for everyone. It was just easier for us at the door since we don't have much time to get set up front. So 18 seemed to work for us. When we had all the different prices, it took our lines a little bit longer to get through.
Right.
Well, that's another thing I was impressed with in the lobby. You get greeted. Do you need to pick up your tickets? Here's Will Call. Do you need to purchase your tickets? Here's this table. It was just amazing.
We try to make it as seamless as possible. Angie Reese, who's also our secretary, is in charge of our volunteers. She does a beautiful job of getting everybody coordinated up front. It's always that whole idea that once we get in the door, we want everybody to just have a relaxing experience. They're willing to spend their arts dollars with us, and we appreciate that.
Well, it shows. It really, really shows. And there are a lot of theaters in the Quad Cities that could probably benefit from doing something similar.
There are so many now. I just keep thinking back to when I was younger. There weren't many choices, and now all the different choices.
Yeah, there used to be like only two or three.
Right.
Included, right. And then there's concerts and other stuff.
Yes.
You're really competing for audiences these days.
Especially over the summer with festivals and everything.
Yes. Oh, yes. We are from between Bix and the different things that go on with, like, Eldridge Days.
Right.
Yes, there is a lot to do, so we try to do the best we can to kind of shine out in there and kind of get everyone's attention.
Now, you've talked about being in a lot of different areas, like helping with school and yada, yada, yada. Are those
too,
paying positions?
Yes. Now, there's stipends more along as opposed to salary.
Right.
But still, something that helps you at least get your gas to get where you're going.
So what's your regular schedule during the school year? Do you have certain schools you're regularly doing productions at?
Currently, no. I actually don't start at Central until, I believe, January is when I start with them, because their production will go up March, April, in that area.
What show is that?
They're doing Hairspray.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
They are doing Hairspray.
That's
so I'll be doing Hairspray from basically January probably
all
through August
25.
Next year. I will know it well by the time we're done.
How long is your term as president?
Let's see here. I believe it is 2 years. So we're coming up on 1 year. I got one more year to go.
Are you directing either of the summer shows or involved?
We haven't picked anything yet. That deadline's coming up right at the middle of September.
So how do you choose what you want to direct, on stage or off stage for?
For me personally or just in general?
In general.
Gosh. I think in general, of course, we all have those bucket lists, things I want to do. And mine kind of got wiped out in the past 5 years. Like, I've been very fortunate to find projects that have been what I wanted to do. And Hairspray was the one I was like, it's never going to happen. It's not going to happen. And all of a sudden, wait a minute.
Why do you say that?
Because it was just not anything I had heard on anyone's radar. You hear people at least talking about, now we're thinking about doing this. We hadn't heard it. I hadn't heard it. And then all of a sudden, country's like, oh, well, we tried for Countryside. It's just we lost it. I was like, oh, if I had known that at the time.
Would you want to be in it?
It's one I'm probably interested in directing. Just given what it's made up of, I love working with younger kids. That's how Footloose came to be. When I directed Footloose, it was a last-minute decision to put into direct because I was like, I haven't been around teens in quite some time, and I really do enjoy working with them. It's a whole different energy. And plus the fact it had 80s in it. It was my calling
right there.
But anymore, just directing, anything that's going to make a difference is kind of what we want to do. We want to be able to just find shows that we can get directors that are out here helping with the future of the theater, getting people more involved that want to come in year after year after year.
Do you recruit directors or do the directors come to you and say, I want to do?
We recruit. We decide the show first. There are some places, such as Playcrafters, where directors can submit their own show. We go the other way with it. We have the shows we want, so then we put the call out for directors, which is the where we're at in the process right now. It's a call for directors and any staff, really, anyone that's interested. I know we've had people apply to direct, choreographers. I think we're looking for tech right now, especially.
What medium do you use to put a call out for directors?
We're on social media. We are very fortunate in that we have Facebook, Instagram. We got onto Snapchat. What's the other one? I always forget. It is TikTok.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, which we're starting to have fun with as we learn about it more and more. Sure. And then we have our own network of people that are educators in the area. You know, they are in the different schools, able to kind of talk to people and recruit. Of course, the kids always give us names. They're like, oh, we've worked with this person. We'd like this person, you know. Can we get a hold of this person? Can you get us an application to give to someone? And absolutely. Anyone we can get.
Oh, that's interesting. What's on the application?
Basically, what they've done in the past, their theater background type things, along with why are they interested? You know, what is your interest in community theater? Because it's a whole different beast from, you know, where it's your 9-to-5 job, which not necessarily 9-to-5. But so from there, references, and then anything special they want us to know about their vision of the show.
Ah.
And you usually have auditions like January, February for that
this year? This past year, we had to go into February. There were weather issues along with some other things that happened with Norscott and the space. But this year, we are the very first weekend in January, back to where we normally
that's
are.
That's early. Oh, okay.
Yes.
We
try to get the kids. Ways ahead. How long do you rehearse? When do you start rehearsals?
We, instead of the typical 8 weeks that a lot of the areas do, we do 6 weeks, 6 weeks prior to opening. And we only do Monday through Thursday, so we are unique in that. But again, we are trying to bridge that gap between community theater and summer stock. So a lot of it is, come in, we need you to have this already under your belt and know this music or be familiar with it. And just know we work fast. You're going to get through stuff in about 2 weeks, and we got to be ready to start running. Again, like Footloose, they did their first promotional activity week 4. They were out performing.
For four weeks? Wow.
Oh, I'm sorry. The stage is pretty big. And you said you rehearse off-site until 2 weeks.
Yes.
At a church. Does that church have a similar size space?
Not exactly. It has a fellowship hall, and we're able to move the tables to the sides. But it is carpeted. So from a dance aspect, it is very challenging to do that there. But we do the best we can. We do have a line that we can put down on the ground, which is able to mark out how many feet you go across so that we know roughly where to stand. We could put that same line when we get to Norscott to alleviate some confusion and be like, okay, go find your 3, go find your 2. Make sure you're standing in front of it. See where that coincides with the audience.
Awesome. Well, you've got it honed down to a specialty by now since you've been doing it since 1983.
Yes, we do.
Wow.
Sometimes we look back and we're like, we don't know how we did it, but oh my gosh, thank goodness everything aligned.
Now, you said your bucket list is almost complete. What's left on your bucket list?
There's only really, let's see, of course Hairspray's on there, but we'll see what happens with all that. I would, anything in this world I could do to see Miss Saigon staged would just
I don't think that's
so
ever been
joy.
Done in the Quad Cities either.
No, not at all. And it's something I would love to see done. My family was very fortunate. They spent a lot of time with the Philippine American Society that was here in the Quad Cities. We would spend Christmases with them all the time. It was the best time, and I would hear them talk about it so much. We sing, but we don't see much of us out there, so we don't go to theater much. And I'm like, someday, or if I win the lottery, Miss Saigon will happen.
Don't you need a helicopter for that show?
We have projectors now. We know how to make it happen.
Doesn't have to be an actual helicopter.
Right.
Awesome.
Just the sound effects and the visual?
Yes.
Right.
Other than that, I would love to see La Caja Fa come back. That would be so much
fun.
That's
a great show, right?
Wow. Well, do you have anything else you'd like to probe?
Oh, my gosh. So 2023 was the 40th anniversary.
Yes.
Then did you guys do anything special?
We had a reception in the hall, in the front hall after the opening. We did. We had our reception going on.
Okay.
And then from there, it was this, what are we going to do going forward? And we talked about dreams. I'm like, well, let's have our season of dreams. That's where we came with that. So the season of dreams is now going to be followed by our season of empowerment. We're going to get the kids out there. We're going to learn all about Baltimore and the teens growing up there, civil rights movement, along with Sister Act. We're going to learn the power of the nuns. once you believe in yourself, what you can really, truly do.
Right, right. Wow.
I think that's unique in the Quad City Theater community, to have a theme like that.
For the summer.
I think that's special. I really do.
We appreciate people that have really clung on to that and just enjoyed it, seeing it happen. When we announced Season of Dreams, people weren't quite sure how to feel about it. They didn't quite get it. And now that they've seen things come through, like, we really see how that kind of came to be.
Right.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And it's gotten a lot of attention in the Heights because what we were doing, it was the most people of color to ever perform on a stage in the Quad Cities. It's never happened. And we got the attention of Hola America, which is one of the largest Latino newspapers in the Midwest. On top of that, we had a few news places that called into us to interview us, to talk in like the Chicago area, the Wisconsin area.
Wow.
And just people know it happened. That's the big thing. And these people have all been part of history. And now they're going on to other theaters and talking about their experiences. And a lot of them, even now, as they're leaving for school, I'm getting messages from them. And they're saying, they can't believe I got to do In the Heights. And we did it the right way. I'm like, I know. They said it couldn't be done. We knew it was going to happen.
Well, I'm excited about Miss Saigon.
That's one of those, like I said, I got to win the lottery for it to happen, or maybe something else could happen. I find that the more we talk about it, the more likely we can move into that direction. I don't know if that's something for Countryside or maybe another theater, but we hope that by doing In the Heights, it inspires people to think outside the box.
Like, oh, absolutely.
And not worry as much. The great thing about In the Heights, too, was also that when we said we were going to do it, we got help from the theater community. I mean, we may have done it, but we're in a debt of gratitude to the Black Box, along with Play Crafters and Spotlight, you know, that all kind of came together to say, we have these people. We will send them your way. What can we do for you? What can we do to get these people in the door? And it was just really a joint effort. And it was a beautiful thing to see. It really brought the community together.
We've talked about on different episodes of Footlights how the theater community in many years past used to be very cliquish. You know, Play Crafters people didn't audition at Genesius Guild. Genesius Guild people didn't get cast at Play Crafters.
And it would have made a great reality show. It really would have.
But that's not so much anymore. We're very cooperative with each other. And I've mentioned before, and I would like to get your spin on, is there something lacking in the Quad Cities theater scene that you would like to see come about? But one of the things that I think is that I would like to see theaters cooperate on more is when they put on shows, because right now they're all competing for the same actors. The same weekends.
In terms of scheduling?
Yes, in terms of scheduling.
So you don't have four shows on the same weekend.
Yes. Oh, no. And I totally understand that. That's kind of where we're at. Like, for Countryside, it's very difficult. We only get so many weeks in our space, and there's only one spot we can put these shows in for each show. Like,
and
that's
I know
all
I had
we can do.
At least two weekends, if not three, that I had three shows in a weekend.
Oh, my goodness.
To review.
Right.
And your Countryside's always the end of June, end of July opening?
Correct. And we have a little bit of a conflict coming up for this coming summer because one of the weekends will fall with 4th of July. So there will not be a 4th of July show because it's a Friday.
But In the Heights was perfect because it was in July and it was over the 4th of July holiday.
Yes, too. And during rehearsal, we got to hear the fireworks outside too.
We heard those at Genesius Guild all the time too.
Right. And the trains. And the.
So is there anything in the Quad City Theater community that you think we could use? What could be done? What is there something lacking that you would like to see?
You know, it's something that we're working with Countryside. We're working more and more on diversity in theater. I mean, it's a big push, diversity, inclusion. And we're hoping, again, that people take what we did within the Heights and go with that and start, you know, if they have questions, they want to know how to reach out to these communities, let us know. It's not enough for people to be doing these things and not go out into those communities you're seeking people out from. For instance, for us, you know, we reached out to Floreciente. We were out there with LULAC and all these things to the Latino community. We were doing similar things when it comes with Hairspray. That same kind of idea. You can't just mount a show and just say, let's hope they come. And I think in the past, that's what's happened. And people have said, well, that's why nobody came. So we didn't do it. So who'd you reach out to? I think a great example of that is the show West Side Story. Anybody that does that one, it's great that they're doing it if they do it. But, you know, who did you reach out to when you couldn't find the numbers to be able to cast those leads as Latina? You know, that kind of thing. So just more outreach, I think, is more of it. It's not enough to just have these shows. You really need to go into the community. It's not just a piece of paper that's posting your casting notices. It's outside of that, too. We're really hoping for Countryside. We've talked about it, and it's probably going to come up within the next two meetings. We're really, really adamant about trying to do some sort of colorblind casting policy, something that says where we are not bound by the contract, we will consider anyone and everyone for roles. So people know that coming in the door, because it makes such a big difference. For people that came to audition for us this past season, that was a lot of the conversation we had. They were like, we finally felt welcomed. And I'm like, well, you know, did something happen? And they, you know, they don't quite explain, but they just say, you know, we just want to know that there might be a seat at the table. And with these other notices, they just don't feel it. And I felt that as a performer, I totally understood that with them. I said, no, I do get that. I said, sometimes it's very daunting when you go into a room and you're the only one that looks like you. Like, you know, I would go in, I'd be the only person of color in a room. And it's like, well, I don't know quite how this is going to go or what will I end up as. You know, there are a lot of auditions where I'm like, oh, I'm going to be a maid or I'm going to be a worker. You know, like, that's just it. That's all. That's all mm-hmm. anybody will see. But the narrative has changed. Very so the more so. That people go with that, just have more and more open minds. And I'm seeing it, little bits and bits, just where we've come in the past 10 years is amazing. Just imagine where we'll be in another 10.
Well, that's how they did it with the live action Little Mermaid movie
yes.
with the African-American actress in the lead.
Yes. Right. And I loved it too. It was so cute.
Okay. If there's nothing else you have to discuss, we'll start to wrap this up with
sure.
my final question. That everybody gets.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It's Friday night. I don't have anything else to do. But as we discussed throughout this time, there is so much going on in the Quad Cities, especially in the summer with the festivals and all the different concerts and everything. Why should I go to community theater?
In general, overall?
However you want to answer that.
You know, you should go to community theater because you're inspiring the future by being there to support them. Everybody starts somewhere. And a lot of them, when you talk to people that have gone up in this industry, I got my start in community theater. People want to see familiar faces in the audience. They want to meet new people. People remember them. I've met so many people through theater that have made such a difference in my life that have got me where I am today, and I'm so grateful. The more we talked about Brian Nelson, I wanted to cry because he was probably one of the biggest influences I had because he sat me down one night and he's like, I remember seeing you in productions. He's like, I wanted to know why you didn't come, weren't going to come to mine. I was like, well, I just didn't know. Things along that sign. It's, people need to go to inspire people. Let them know that they appreciate what they're doing. Not to mention, you never know what you might see and be inspired by yourself. That was a big thing, again, in the Heights. People came to see us that had never experienced theater before but wanted to support the Latino community. And now they're hooked. They're like, when are the next shows? Like, what's going to happen next? Or they've got kids that want to be involved. And you need the arts to be well-rounded. I mean, I adamantly stand by that. My AmeriCorps background was part of an Arts Across the Curriculum initiative. So the arts are what needed to have these well-rounded individuals, people that are able to speak in public. That's one of the biggest things you growing up. The ability to speak in public will get everybody everywhere. So if you're going to help these people, imagine what these people will grow up to be.
Awesome.
Right.
Well, that is a wrap, folks. Thank you, Cindy Ramos, for being a guest on this episode. And thank you so much, Jonathan, for co-hosting. I hope I can lure you in to another episode in the future. So I'm Chris Hicks.
I'm Jonathan Turner.
Break a leg.
Thanks for listening to Footlights, a community theater podcast from the Quad Cities. Footlights is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you'd like to explore more podcasts from WVIK or support our work, you can do that at WVIK.org or by downloading the WVIK app.